Texas.
That's so dumb.
Felger.
Oh, you idiot.
Nass.
Holy crap.
Felger and Nass.
I hate that.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the program, Felger and Maserati, on a Friday, which means what, Anthony?
Agenda-free.
Agenda-free Friday, brought to you by Planet Fitness, the world judges. They don't. PlanetFitness.com. Anything from the week, anything we've gotten to or have yet to get to, it's up to you. You set the agenda with your telephone calls. So, I give you the number, 617-779-0985. Jimmy releases the hounds. I log on to the computer. As soon as you're up, we go to you. In the meantime, we fill that time. With opening thoughts. Do you have one, Anthony?
I do have an opening thought. And I promised the listeners earlier in the week that I would make it my mission, after Daron Harmon's latest interception against the Minnesota Vikings last week, to go through and review every one of his career interceptions and see how many of them are actually legit and how many of them are completely fraud, fake interceptions. Fake picks is how I get. So I made this my mission. And I went through and I looked at all 16 of Daron Harmon's career picks. And in fact, I put the video up on our Facebook page so our listeners can find it there. All 16 in capsule form. You can watch it in like 2 minutes. All 16 picks.
So he's at regular season and playoffs.
13 in the regular season, 3 in the playoffs. And because it's my recollection that Daron Harmon, frankly, does nothing on any of his picks. It feels to me like he does zero. The one at the end of the game last week was J.C. Jackson in coverage on Thielen, I think it was. The ball popped up in the air, and wouldn't you know it, who caught it? Daron Harmon. Because he just happened to be standing there in the right place, and the ball popped into his hands. So I went through all 16 picks. How many real ones I found?
How many did you find, Ness?
Five. 11 of his 16 career interceptions, fake. Fake picks is how I would categorize them. Five were thrown directly to him with no receiver nearby, with no near proximity of a receiver. I mean, it's really unbelievable. Five popped up into the air and had like a homing device that went right to him, including one in Pittsburgh last year that's absolutely ridiculous. The ball deflects 10 yards right to him. It's unbelievable. And the last one, he ripped away and stole from Stephon Gilmore.
Yeah.
So 11 of his 16 picks, fake. Fake interceptions, maybe the most overrated player on the Patriots.
Find the video Maz put together, all 16 on our Facebook page. So check it out. Murray, what's your opening thought?
Do you wrap that video, Maz, by saying, go F yourselves, too? Like, did you just turn the camera around to say, hey, Patriots fans, F off? I believe we're going to learn more about whether or not this Patriots team, this year's Patriots team, is for real or not this weekend with this game against the Dolphins more than the following game against the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Steelers, for all their bad coaching and idiocy that you see, at least over the last three or four weeks, they're at least on par with the Pats. I mean, they are one of the teams that's considered the iron of the AFC year in, year out. And in terms of talent, they compare to the Patriots. So, you know, they've won there consistently, and they've had their number, and they kind of skated last year with that Jesse James call, but it was a win. But, you know, those games are usually pretty competitive, and I wouldn't be shocked if they lost to the Steelers. This Dolphins team, that they've been on a bunch, and the terrible 1 o'clock game last week was Dolphins-Bills, and if you watched it, especially at the end, the Dolphins did everything in their power to try to give that game away to that terrible Bills team. That's a bad organization right now. And they are year in, year out. And I don't care about the one and four in the last five that they've been down there, and Brady's losing record against this team. They have zero excuse to lose to this year's Dolphins team. They shut them out earlier in the year for a reason. That was 38-0 or whatever the hell it was.
35-7.
That's what this game should be this weekend. That Dolphins team, I don't care that it's down there. I don't care about the heat. I don't care about all the excuses. And that Brady and the Patriots throughout this whole era have had trouble in Miami. They should absolutely murder that team this weekend. And if they don't, they're frauds.
Okay. Well, my thought is related to that. And who's the single most important player in this game for the Patriots?
Brady.
And it's so cliche to say that because he's that for any single game. But let me put it another way. They've lost four of their last five down there. Who's been the biggest culprit?
Brady.
He doesn't get enough attention.
It doesn't get enough attention.
Well, I don't know. Maz did it earlier this week. We'll give you the numbers again. Look at how Brady's played down there. It starts with him.
He's been garbage down in Miami. He's been garbage.
And I had
one good game down there in the last 5 years.
I don't get why those factors Again, whatever it is that causes those players to play that way down there. I don't know why it would affect the quarterback. If anything, the quarterback should be okay down there. Good conditions for a quarterback. But he struggles down there, and this is not a good Dolphins team. This isn't like earlier in his career when he had those great Dolphins defense that he was going against. We talked about earlier in the week as well with Jason Taylor and Zach Thomas and Surtain and Madison and those guys. That was a tough unit. So he struggled with them. Everyone struggled with those guys. This Dolphins team, they blow. He's lost four of his last five. It's been largely him. There's been other problems, but he's been first on the list. Of why they've struggled down there.
And this year they're averaging 18.2 points a game on the road. That eliminates the defensive and special teams touchdowns. So look, we always sit here and say, with the quarterback, we always say over and over again, he's the general. He's the field general. He's the leader of the offense. So if the offense doesn't score, it's a reflection on the quarterback. I don't know where else you go with that in a passing league. Who are you going to blame?
Okay, so, the guard? Murray mentioned the coach, which is fair, because that game in 2015, where they ran it, or, you know, it was the Steven Jackson game, hard to blame Brady for the way they got off in that game. Fair point by you, Murray. Is that what you were referring to?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I mean, not a bad point. But it's not like he's been good when he's had the chance either now. And so let's see how Brady fares down there. Hasn't been good on the road, as Maz points out, all season long. He sucked there.
And their best Dolphins' best cornerback's not going to play Xavier Howard.
Of course he's not. Playing the Patriots. Whenever you play the Patriots, all your best players get hurt. Don't you remember that?
Yeah.
So he's down. We'll see what Brady does this week.
If they lose this game, it's inexcusable. That Dolphins team, they shouldn't even have six wins. They're the worst team at 500 in the NFL this year. They suck. Offensive line's bad. We all know what Tannehill is. Their defense is hurt and not really that good. They don't have the pass rush that they used to. Robert Quinn might be the only decent player up front. Like, they suck. They should kill this Dolphins team this weekend.
There's our opening thoughts. What are yours? Agenda Free Friday at 617-779-0985. Frank, lead it off with the Bruins thought for us.
Okay, so the past couple of games have not been good, and I actually agree with Cassidy. I thought that last night was worse. Like, you had a chance to actually win the game, even at the very least take a point out of that game.
Hold on. Cassidy said last night was worse than the Florida game?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
Because he felt that there were too many passengers on the team last night, and I couldn't agree with him more. How many games this year are we going to watch where David Pastrnak is the only one who's doing anything? And I understand that the team is probably going to say, well, you know, we want to get Bergeron back and Carver back. I don't care. I mean, I literally don't care anymore. It is time for Don Sweeney to get his thumbs out of his butt and start dialing his fingers around the league and try to make a trade.
Okay, who are you trading, Frank? The young guys?
I'm trading Torrey Krug because I feel that he can give you half of what Torrey Krug can give you. If you get yourself a forward up front and do some scoring other than Pastrnak, I think you'd be okay. You've got a press.
So let me stop you there because your phone's mediocre to begin with. Grizzlick gives you 3/4 of Krug.
Yes.
He gives you 80% of Krug. It's not half a Krug. He's an off-brand Krug. And how good is that brand to begin with? So, yes. I mean, Matt's been talking about Krug all season long.
I think Krug on the right team is an asset.
I'm not panicking. I'm not demanding a trade for these guys. They're still in the playoffs. Now they're down to being the second wild card. They're the 8, you know, seed, if you will. And so it's shrinking. You know, look out below. You can see it coming. But as long as they're in the range, I don't know, those panic moves. You know, last year they traded a first-round pick for Rick Nash. Gets them absolutely nothing, 0.0, and they lose another first-round pick. I'm being careful about that. Now, you want to pump and dump some of the young guys who you know in your heart, you know, can't make it? Fine. No problem. Krug? Yep. I would love to peel off Krejci because he's just, once again, he gets moved up to that line last night with Marchand and Pastrnak, and that line gets worse. It just defies logic other than Krejci's totally lost it. And he scored his first goal in 18 games last night, took a pulled goalie and like four guys to screen the goalie for him to get it, but he wasn't even meaning to score on that.
Speaking of which, you know Krug doesn't have a goal this year?
I did not realize that.
He's a donut. Donut. No goals for Krug. Zero.
So Krejci, Krug, bye. I do it yesterday. You're probably going to get more for your young guys. I don't know. I'm just not panicking. As long as you're in it. The sneaky little thing is, the playoff spot you want to be in is the one they're in. you want to be the 8 seed. You want to be the second wild card, because then you cross over and play in that Metropolitan Division, which is not nearly as strong as yours. You get to avoid Tampa. You get to avoid Toronto. You get to avoid these teams the first couple rounds. And you play off against, you know, I mean, not that Washington's any picnic, but Columbus and that side of it. It's a little...
Take your chances.
It's a little lighter of a load on that other side. But if you're going to be the second wild card, that means you're 1 or 2 points clear of the playoffs all season long. You want to live like that?
No.
It's a hard way to live.
I'm surprised Cassidy even said that, too, because those last two losses, Florida and Detroit, were complete no-shows. At least the first couple of periods last night were competitive.
They were much better last night than in Florida. Much better. I can see why he's frustrated. He could have gotten a point.
Sure.
And then puked on themselves in the third period. Matt in Gloucester with the Patriots thought here on Agenda Free Friday. Go ahead, Matt.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? We all know the Patriots like to play situational football, and they've had some trouble scoring this year. I wonder what your thoughts are on offensively. Do you think that they have claims that they have had success with, and they stay away from those claims and try to find other ways to score in order to help them down towards later in the season?
Okay, so what Matt is saying is that they've saved their good stuff.
No.
They're not scoring because they're saving their good stuff.
Yeah, like against Green Bay, the trick plays? So like, what I would say is, no, the one thing I've heard, and I was thinking about this on the way in listening to the Midday Show, because Zoe said it, and everyone says it, Murray just said it, Miami's defense isn't good this year. You know, in those other years, Miami's defense is good. They've had problems down there, but now it's different. Is the Patriots' offense the same? Like, I look at it and say, you're right about the Miami defense. They're not the same. Neither is the Patriots offense, though, and that's what worries me in this game, is that, I don't know, the number feels big to me, and I always go by the spread, you know.
What is it? I didn't even know.
The last I saw was 8. I've seen some other places it's 9.
So it's gone up since the Howard, since he was ruled out.
Okay, so that's a big number on the road. Like, that is a big number on the road. And given the history of the Trump, now, I hope they get down there and they win 35-7 again. But the reality is that if I were just an objective better, Miami's 5-1 at home this year. Brady doesn't play. I'd take the points. I just feel like this thing's going to be a dogfight.
Okay, off and running on Agenda Free Friday. Back to you right after this.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub. Miss something?
Come back and put it in my face.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5, the Sports Hub app. Now back to Felger and Mass.
They suck.
On Boston's home for sports.
When you look at those stats, it is pretty interesting, you know. The way, you know, some of those teams from the South come up and play in the North, and the North play in the South, then there's got to be something to it. But again, it just comes down to playing good football. I mean, we had some great games down there too. Hopefully this is a great game for us, but we got to go earn it. That's certainly the case here.
Tom Brady spoke today, asked a bunch about Miami and why Miami plays so well against them down there and why they've struggled and he's struggled down there. He goes on and talks about the heat. Go ahead, Jimmy.
They play well at home. I think they use that climate as a benefit to them. Just like we use ours as a benefit to us. We're out there practicing. You know, we're used to, you know, I know exactly how many layers I need to put on per degree. You know, how many heat packs I need, you know, and that's just the way it is. I'm sure they do the same, so... Us going and playing good football is ultimately, that's the opponent, is the Dolphins and not the climate. And playing a good football game is definitely, you know, what this week's about for us. And we can't expect to go out there and play less than our best and win. And, you know, we should be playing our best. It's that time of year.
Okay. I haven't seen the transcript. I didn't listen to the whole thing. But at some point, wouldn't you like to hear him say, I need to play better down there? I need to play better down there.
Yes, given his history down there, yeah.
I haven't heard him do that all week. He was asked about it by Scratchy there on Monday night. I haven't heard, unless I missed it somewhere. Like, I need to be. I heard Josh McDaniels say it this week when McDaniels did his conference call and was asked about being a head coach. He answered by saying, I'm worried about this week. I need to be better down in Miami. Has Tom Brady said it? Because he's had real problems down there. Last 5 games, Maz, again, you know the numbers off the top of your head, right?
Yep, 1-4, completion percentage under 60%, basically 59.5. His ratings in the low 80s, and that includes a game where he had a rating of 130. 7 touchdowns, 3 picks, 9 sacks. He has more sacks than touchdown passes in Miami over the last 5 years.
And that, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, we're showing the graphic on NBC Sports Boston. It's, I mean, what was last year's excuse?
Oh, that game, so that's what I wanted to bring up. That Monday night game last year, where Jay Cutler essentially came out of retirement to start that game, and they lose to him. That was a chuck and duck game. Oh, well, they didn't have Rob Gronkowski because of the suspension. Tough crap. Brady played like ass in that game.
55%, 24-43, 55%, one touchdown, two interceptions, sacked a couple times. I mean, you want to blame the defense for giving up 27? I don't know. Brady went down there and put on 20 points on the board.
Yeah, to me, the big thing is the points. And with the exception of the win, in which they won handily in that game, and they were in the mid to high 30s, if I remember right, the other four, they haven't scored more than 20 in those games down there. And so to me, I don't know how else you look at it and say, well, what's the excuse? Bad weather?
He needs to be better. And the one game that he played well, Murray, it was the season finale in 2016. They won 35-14, and he was great. Three touchdowns, no interceptions, rating of 130. You know, and I barely remember that game.
I'm trying to rack my brain.
Like, I can't even think, I can't remember one play from it. Did they need it for home field? They must have. I don't know. But, I mean, again, I can't even remember. But it feels like a direct atonement for what they did the year before. The year before, that was the Steven Jackson game. That was the year before where they really just leaked away the game plan and said, we don't need this because we can beat the Broncos anywhere. Whoops. And they lose that game. Brady only threw it 21 times in that game.
I think they pulled him in that game, if I remember right.
Well, yes, because he was getting clobbered at the end. Okay, but there was, like, they started out.
Right.
You know, whatever it was, running 17 of 19 plays. Steven Jackson got the ball the first 12 snaps. There was, you know, I don't remember the exact numbers, but it was something like that. And then somewhere in the second and third quarters, they said, okay, fine, let's play. And Brady started getting tatered. And I think that they said, all right, enough.
No, I made it sound like that they pulled him because he sucked. No, they took him out of the game late because he was getting killed. He was getting killed.
So Brady needs to be better down there. Brady does. We continue with your calls. John in Saugus has a thought on this very thing. Go ahead, John.
Hey, guys. I just want to say Brady's been bad, but the defense has been worse. I mean, the opposing quarterback, Cutler last year, Tannehill, they look like Joe Montana. They do whatever they want the whole game. It's terrible.
Okay, well, they gave up 27 last year. Is that a terrible day? I mean, against Jay Cutler, it ain't great, but I don't know. Usually you put 27 points on the defense holds up to 27. Brady can usually get you four touchdowns.
Well, see,
how the Patriots are built.
Exactly. See that, and the way I look at it is he's the veteran, he's the leader. If there are young guys that are teetering wherever and the defense isn't as good, he's the guy that has to lead you in a game like that.
In the Steven Jackson game, they only gave up 20. That's a winning score on this team. You want to go back to 2014, fair enough. They lost 33-20. But again, so they give up 33. That's a horrible defensive day. But in that game, it was a season opener in 2014. Brady, 29 of 56, 51.7% completion percentage. A 69.7 rating. So that's him. That's him. John in Arlington. Go ahead, John.
Hi. This is a question about Sunday's game and the Packers game. The Patriots have a weapon they don't use that often, but when they use it, it's very effective, and that's the hurry-up offense. They had a 2-minute and 52-second drive to open the Packers game. They scored. This past Sunday, they had two minutes and 52 seconds left in the first half, and it was a tight game. The game hadn't been decided yet, and we get the kickoff to open the second half. The Patriots waltzed around like they were in a stupor, and then they went down about 2 minutes and 3 seconds, and there was a challenge, and we got 27 seconds back on the clock. Why doesn't McDaniels or Brady wake up and say, we get this hurry-up offense? They don't use it anymore.
John, I agree. What happened to it?
I mean, I have a theory.
They use it here and there, but it used to be a real staple.
Sure, no questions.
What happened?
I'm wondering if maybe they can't.
Because?
Guys can't move well enough. Gronk can't move well enough. Edelman can't move well enough. And Gordon doesn't know the offense. I mean, you could do it with Hogan probably, but again, how often is he getting the ball anyway? You could certainly do it with White. Or, you know, I suppose there's always a chance that they're waiting because of limitations on those guys to do it later in the year or something. But my guess is they can't. Why are you smiling?
You okay over there, Murray? You want to take something out on the show? Come on. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm going to lose it. See sucking computers that don't work. Go on.
You had to change stations over there.
Who screws with these things like this? It's like overnight and weekends, five-year-olds come in here and put jelly all over everything, and then they move the wires so everything gets disconnected and nothing works. If we used Macs, never mind.
The Macintosh computer, you're saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mac.
And now,
yeah,
of course, this keyboard doesn't work either. Because why would it? Why would the keyboard work? Why would the keyboard work? Why would it? Is numlock on? Do I have to hit numlock so the effing thing works, maybe? Or how about scroll lock? No, it doesn't work either. That's great. Good. I'll just write the effing headlines on my phone, and I'll read it off that. Go on. Continue your conversation. Sorry. You're dealing with like a caged animal that got loose, because I can't deal with things like this.
I blame
just work.
Sorry. I blame Arcand. Yeah, he was the last one at that computer.
Emilio in Rhode Island. Hi, Emilio. What do you got for us today on an agenda-free Friday?
All righty. Thanks, guys. So what I have to say is that the Pittsburgh Steelers culture is starting to remind me of the Boston Celtics culture. They love to bring out their former great players, all the championships they used to win when they're on national TV, and they love to crap their pants when they're up double digits. Like, oh, wait, not like the Boston Celtics ever do that, right? Retiring a number, right? And they lose where LeBron James comes in here and smashes you by double digits. So in a spot that you should win, you constantly overlook the opponent and underachieve and love to talk about all your past great players and overlook who's in front of you. That's who the Boston Celtics culture is. It's become the Pittsburgh Steelers culture.
Standing ovation. Standing ovation. Standing ovation. Standing ovation. That's so true. It's so true. Everyone's the MVP. The parade is always ready to go. Everyone's overrated. You can't turn the corner without some former retired player or this or that. Oh, my God. It's so true. And the fans. Honkville. Oh, so good, Emilio.
Who's there, Lusky?
Oh, I'm sure they have some. Rocky Blyer.
I was just going to say Rocky Blyer. You beat me to it.
It's
Rocky Blyer.
Some overrated stiff from the 70s. And Rocky Blyer was an American hero. Like, I don't want to rag on Rocky Blyer. But I'll pick another guy. You know, Jerome Bettis, whatever. How many overrated turd bags have gone through there? But, oh, God, their bags are always packed. It's always one before they hit the floor. Oh, it's perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, I think it's Benny Cunningham.
Stay tuned for more Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Boys and girls, I'm here today to present an exciting opportunity for togetherness.
Felger and Mass.
That's awesome.
Of course it is.
That's great.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
Krejci has it at his own blue line, turns and fires from long range. It goes wide, out in front. Marchand had a chance just as the horn sounded. And the Lightning hold on for the victory for the first time all season. The Bruins have lost three straight games in regulation. Your final tonight, Lightning 3 and the Bruins 2.
A couple more Bruins thoughts for you. Suck bag of the night. Yeah, start handing out a suck bag of the night award.
Okay, go.
Sort of like the three stars, except it's in reverse. The suck bag. Number one suck bag last night. The number one suck bag the night before in Florida, just to set up, was Torrey Krug, who could not have sucked any worse. Then maybe Connor Clifton, but he's supposed to suck, and so he was an honorary suck bag. The suck bag the night before was Torrey Krug. Last night's suck bag, Brad Marchand. Suck. Suck. And like, Krejci's like an annual award winner. Suck bag. He's devolved in front of our eyes.
He gets a season award.
Oh my God, suck. I feel like I'm not doing Krejci's poor play justice by leaving him off the suck bag list. He sucks. But last night's suck bag, Marchand. Can't keep the puck on his stick. Stupid plays with the puck all night. He cost them the real backbreaker of the night, the third Tampa Bay goal, which was a shorthanded goal. They're down 2-1. They're on the power play. Marchand has the puck right inside the blue line. Stamkos loses his stick. So it's one of those, you know, 5-on-3.5, which you really got to take advantage of that guy without the stick. Instead, Marchand just rifles it from the point, goes off someone's knee, shin pads, and there's a breakaway going the other way. Where I would say Rask did not really give himself the best chance.
Oh my God, did he get smoked on that?
He sort of, so the last two Tampa goals were breakaways. If Rask could have given me one of those, maybe you eke your way in. But the fact of the matter is, last night, you had no business being in that hockey game. Tampa's about twice as good as you. And when everyone's healthy, they're just under twice as good as you. They're freaking loaded. They're better than you. And a couple bounces of the puck and they win that game. It's another 5-0 game. So, like, I'm not saying Rask cost you the game. He didn't. He kept you in the game. He was good. Rask was good. That second breakaway? Yeah. All right. But whatever. He's not the story. Not
I mean,
even
he wasn't even close on that one, though.
You know, I gave him half the net. But either way, not, you know, not the story. So, you know, never mind the injuries and the kids. There's some of the established players that aren't carrying their weight. And last night, that was Marchand. Suck bag of the night. Another thing I just want to mention, pleasant surprise that Charlie McAvoy was in the lineup. And then just reading it again, I'm just trying to read between the lines, and I'm just reading from the Globe notes here. McAvoy, who had missed the previous 20. Oh, and by the way, he sucked too, but he was supposed to. He steps on the puck in his crease for the first Tampa goal. He gives him a power play a couple minutes later because he loses his feet trying to defend in his end, and he didn't look right, but why should he? He hasn't played in 20 games. So, like, I get that. He joined the rush a couple times where I can just tell immediately he'll help him offensively because he gets it offensively, and he's that talented. So, anyway, he plays and then played in 20 games. Last time he played was October 18th, and no one knows the hit that he got concussed on. So there's sort of like this weird thing with McAvoy. Is it something else other than the concussion? Is he super sensitive to concussions? Is he soft? You know, like, you just sort of wonder what. There's a question mark there with McAvoy. He was taken off the injury report before the game. This is sort of out of nowhere because he was supposed to just practice with the team, and then Saturday was going to be the night they were going to wonder, you know, that was sort of the go time.
Right. The initial plan was for him to not play on this trip.
So they asked Cassidy after the game, quote, it was entirely his call, which leads me to believe he might have been cleared for a little bit here. So, you know, it was his call, not the team's. I just sort of read into that. Last Saturday, McAvoy said his symptoms, which he called overwhelming, when he reported them to the team in Edmonton. Again, this is for a concussion on a hit that he doesn't even remember what happened. And it's not like he was hit so hard he doesn't remember. No one can identify the hit. Both he and the club expressed hope he wouldn't remain out for long, although there was no definitive timetable. Everyone has been good with keeping me up and keeping me in good spirits, McAvoy said, and we're getting there. McAvoy, who had issues with his vestibular system in the preseason, according to general manager Don Sweeney, missed one of Boston's two preseason games. So I was reading that, I went, wait, what? McAvoy, who had issues with his vestibular system in the preseason, according to general manager Don Sweeney, missed one of Boston's two preseason games in China with an unspecified illness. So wait a minute. Was that the vestibular system? Or is that something on top of the vestibular system? And what the hell is a vestibular system? So, of course, I had to look that up.
Can I interject here for 1 second?
And I guarantee you Maz knows because he's smart.
No. I'm going to interject here quickly, just quickly. Okay? I have covered sports now for almost 30 years, as have you. I have never heard this.
Never heard that one?
Never.
Do you know what it is?
Nope, I don't.
You don't?
It's
I
like
don't.
Vertigo,
well,
right?
Well, very good, Murray. Wikipedia, the vestibular system in most mammals is the sensory system that provides the leading contribution to the scent, balance, and spatial orientation for the purpose of coordinating movement with balance.
Equilibrium, basically, yeah.
Vertigo, very good, Murray. Smart Melrose High over there. Suck on that.
My dad had an issue with this years ago.
Okay. Either way. So then it's like, that was a new one.
Vestibular? Is that what it's called?
No, but I'm just saying. So he had the heart thing last year. Now he had the vestibular system.
It's a fancy way of saying it's an inner ear infection.
In the preseason. He missed a game in China with an unspecified illness that apparently wasn't the vestibular system or the heart.
Probably had a parasite.
Then he has a concussion that no one knows where it happened, but he said the symptoms were overwhelming, and it took him a month and a half, almost 2 months, to get back from the thing. He sort of pops up a day earlier than people thought, and I'm just telling you how it's gone. I'm not drawing any conclusions necessarily. He's a hugely important guy to the team.
No, like, as you rattled them all off, it's like, it feels like the guy's a medical mystery. Like, he's an enigma. You can't just, there's always something going on with this guy. And I'm not blaming him for it. I'm just telling you it's weird.
Well, so I guess it's concerning, at the end of the day.
So that whole vertigo stuff, that can be worrisome.
Is it Nick Asaski?
Yeah, it was Nick Asaski, whose career basically ended because of it. And it's rare. But think about it. If you have some sort of, you know, balance and equilibrium issue that is at all remotely chronic, or, you know, and then you have a concussion on top of it, that doesn't bode well for your balance and equilibrium,
okay,
does it?
Right. Do you tie it into the fact that they don't even know the hit?
Maybe.
There was no specific hit.
I mean, I would. I'm no doctor, but to me, that's logical.
Well, you keep adding these things up. It's like, oi, like, they need, this is the guy.
Brock Holt dealt with it within the last year or so, too.
He's another one, yeah. The whole vertigo thing is, if it's recurring, can be a problem.
Well, anyway, there's your Bruins Minute. Matt in Boston wants to weigh in on the Bs. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, so I feel like the Bruins, ever since Sweeney came in, have been kind of caught in this limbo where instead of making any blockbuster moves, they keep trying to rely on the young guys, but the young guys aren't developing quickly enough, and it's putting some strain on the end of the prime for some of our veterans. And we're caught in this holding pattern where we're not quite good enough to be a contender, but we don't stink enough to get a good draft pick. And you're not always.
Oh, that's just wrong. Matt, you stunk plenty well enough in 2015 to get a boatload of good players, and you blew the draft. That's just wrong. That's just wrong. They've tried to rebuild from the middle, which is totally reasonable in that sport. No problem. Tons of teams have done it.
I also don't think it's fair to say that they've been stuck. Last year, they took a huge step forward. Huge. To me, one of the more alarming parts is now guys aren't staying in the same spot. They're going backwards. That's the alarming part.
But let's be honest. It's a condition this year. Because last year, we said it was the perfect balance. Young kids coming up, making the team younger and better, contributing to the primes of Bergeron, and so they're competing and contending while they're building through the system. It looked perfect.
Exactly.
Now it's sort of dried up. But don't delude yourself into thinking they haven't sucked enough to get a good draft pick. Guess who leads the league in scoring? Anyone? Can anyone tell me who leads the league in scoring?
No.
Mikko Ratinen. He's in Colorado. Guess when he was drafted?
2015, after the 15th pick.
Okay, it was just before. He was drafted 10th overall. I thought he was after that pick. But he was drafted 10th overall. The Bruins picked 13, 14, 15. Could they have moved up three spots to get the kid? I don't know. All I'm telling you is in 2015, there were tons of good players. Tons of good players. Right before they picked, right after they picked. All over the place. And so don't delude yourself into thinking that. If you wanted them to tank, then you wanted them to trade Patrice Bergeron and Zdeno Chara, which they could have done that. Maybe that would have been the right thing to do. I don't blame them for not doing it, because I've seen teams do that and never get good. Edmonton. Buffalo took a while. Maybe they're on their way. You know, so I've seen a lot of teams do it different ways. Adam in New York. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, how's it going, guys? So I'll preface this by saying that I agree with you, Felgert, that, you know, they're in the eighth seed right now. It's a long season. The puck can start bouncing their way. Guys can get hot. So this season's not over. But this shouldn't come as a shock to anybody that Bergeron goes down and this team has trouble scoring, okay? They got skated circles around by the Tampa Bay Lightning in the playoffs, and you came up with a list of three things that they needed to do to improve this offseason. Number one, get a top left-shot defenseman that you can pair with Charlie McAvoy. They did not do that. And don't tell me John Moore. John Moore is not a guy that you say, wow.
No, he's just a guy.
Play.
He's
like,
a guy.
Yeah, he's just a guy. He's just a guy. Number two, go get a top six forward.
Secondary scoring.
On the right
scoring.
Side of David Krejci.
Secondary scoring.
Yes. Did they do that?
No.
No. Number three, okay, they got their goalie. But great. They had a backup goalie last year. I mean, this guy might be a little better, but that goes without saying.
Goaltending, hey, Adam, I'm going to cut you off because we're up against it. Goaltending's not the issue right now. I mean, you can quibble with a goal here or there, but it's not on the board right now. It's all this other stuff. It's secondary scoring. So Patrice Bergeron's hurt. I get it. What about everybody else? What about the 11 other forwards? Because when he was back, it was just that one line scoring anyway. So three other lines have not scored. Now four lines aren't scoring. Even when you put Krejci up with those other guys, they get worse. So that's an issue. But I'm still not panicking, and you know, I'm not loading up to make a trade, because ideally you hang in where you hang in and you build up value. You're selling low on these guys. You know, you're selling low if you start trading the Bjorks and the Donatos and these guys of the world. You're going to be selling low.
Yeah, the time to do it, though, was during the offseason. They had a surplus of guys there.
Agreed. We continue on Agenda Free Friday. Don't go anywhere.
Michael Felger, Tony Maserati, Felger and Maz. What can we say about Felger and Maz that you haven't already screamed in your car?
Sit on that one, bitch, and spin.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Down he goes. A strikeout for Eovaldi as Bregman is now 0-for-4. Second time they've struck him out tonight.
Dropped down a little through the riser at 102. Four-seamer by Bregman.
102 miles an hour. 102. Bregman comes up late in the game. Eovaldi goes 102. Sit your ass down. Post that on Instagram, bitch. Like, that's what that was. Oh, I love that. That, to me, was one of the great moments of the game. Oh, did I love that. After that whole thing, here's Bregman in the box. Here's Evaldi on the mound. Elimination night. 102. Suck on that. They wouldn't throw him a fastball the whole series. 102, you can't hit that. Sit your fat ass down. No. Oh, I loved it. Oh, God, did I love that. 102. When's the last time a Red Sox pitcher threw 102?
That stuff usually comes home to roost.
What a bullet. Oh, my God. Sit on that one, bench, and spin.
All right, Maz, anything new on Evaldi today? You did quite a job, quite a number on him yesterday.
No, I didn't do a number on him. I'm happy for him. God bless him. Guy like that, journeyman, career, be able to land a $68 million contract, all the power to him.
What do you got today?
However, I did some research last night. It was a big night for research last night and this morning. I told you yesterday, I looked it up. Evaldi started his career in 2011, pitched through 2018. Okay, so that is basically an eight-year sample. He threw 850 innings and has an ERA of 4.13. So 850, right in the middle of 800 and 900, 4.13, right in the middle of 4.00 and 4.25. Okay, smack dab. You couldn't find him more in the middle of those two parameters. So I ran numbers.
Oh, good.
And over the last 8 years, there are 10 pitchers in baseball who fall into the same class as Evaldi. I mean, almost exactly the same, right? Exactly the same.
Meaning they had a 1-something ERA in the World Series and won you a championship based on the sheer heroics of their performance?
No, I'm taking their career as a whole.
I'm
not looking at 5 outings in a month. That's not what I'm looking at. I'm looking at a bigger sample that actually gives you an indication who they are.
But these guys in the same class with them have won championships and they were integral parts of their championships.
Nope. Nope, I'm just giving you the big picture.
Sorry to slow your roll there. I'm just
okay. No. You slow the roll all you want. I don't really give a rat's ass if you slow my roll, because I know what the numbers are. Okay, and those guys on the list are, I'm going to give you the abridged version, but quickly: Hector Santiago, Brandon McCarthy, Aaron Harang, Miguel Gonzalez, Dylan G, Kevin Gausman, Mike Fiers, Scott Feldman, Jorge De La Rosa. Evaldi is the tenth. You know what the average? This is the maximum deal these guys have signed during that period of time. You know what the average deal that those guys got was? Average. 2 years, $19 million. 2 years, $19 million. And that's even stretching. But nonetheless, let's call it that. 2 years, $19 million, $9.5 per. Evaldi got 4 years, $67.5 million. He got twice the length that anyone else got on average, and he basically got, you know, almost four times the money. Call it 3.5. Like, the idea that, I'm not telling you I'm mad, I'm not mad. I'm just telling you the fact is, grossly overpaid to keep him
okay,
here. I hope he lives up to the contract.
How do you feel about this statement? I'm glad the Red Sox grossly overpaid Nathan Evaldi.
Yeah, that doesn't bother me. I understand why you want him.
I mean, look, they overpaid. In your case, it was borderline outrageous. That was what you used yesterday.
Correct. Borderline outrageous. That is correct.
Okay. Are you glad that they overpaid for him?
I'd have let him go, but yeah, I like the guy. I like his stuff.
But you would have let him go.
I would have let him go. I wouldn't have paid him $17 million a year. I wouldn't have. I told you I had to draw on the line at 3 and 40. I thought that was pushing it. And again, based on the – and I went by gut on this. I didn't look this up months ago. I didn't honestly did not do that. I told you instinctively my guess was 8 to 10. And the fact is that when you compare him to guys like him, he comes in the $9 million range. That's what the average is, $9.5 million a year. So I was willing to go to 13 and change, plus a vesting option for a fourth year. Like, I felt like that was going to a pretty good distance.
Okay, this is the thing.
I like the guy. I like his stuff. I see almost no way he can live up to this contract.
This is something that I meant to, okay, there's a whopper right there. No way he lives up to the contract.
I said almost no way.
Okay. Let's see. What if he turns into a 15-game winner?
Well, then he'll live up to it.
You don't think he's a 15-game winner?
Based on what?
His stuff.
There's lots of guys with stuff who don't last.
Okay, I want to get to this. I tried to get this yesterday and I forgot. I want to do it today. I should have known that this was coming. When Alex Speer posted this story in the Globe, Alex Spears posted this story in the Globe like 2 days ago before the first tweet from the guy in Milwaukee who said indications are it's heating up with the Red Sox and Eovaldi.
I saw this.
Because I guess the Brewers were in on him. But this story by Alex Spears was posted before that tweet. So whatever day that was, I can't remember. It all blends together. Wednesday morning, whatever. It was posted in the Globe, Alex Spear, headline. Multiple Tommy John surgeries won't hurt Nathan Eovaldi's value. And right when I read that headline, I said to myself, uh-oh, they're trying to tell us he's not an injury risk. Because Alex Spear is very tight with John Henry and the team, and they're owned by the team. Sure. And I'm not dumping on Alex. I'm just saying
Statement of fact.
I feel like Alex...
He has a good relationship with them.
I think Alex has a good bead on the team, okay? Let's put it that way. And when he writes something like that, I think there's some tells. And to me, Alex Spear is one of those writers. When he writes something like that, it's often a tell. And when he wrote, multiple Tommy John surgeries won't hurt Nathan Eovaldi's value, I said, oh, something's happening. And I didn't hit it hard enough because I swear to God I felt that before those tweets came out from the guy in Milwaukee. And in this story, of course, they've done research. Nathan Eovaldi's had a revision, Tommy John. He's had two. They call them revision surgeries. Okay? They've gone back and they've analyzed the 93 revision surgeries that have happened in the last several years. I guess this is between 1974 and 2016.
Yep.
93 revision surgeries. Of those players, roughly 63% returned to their previous professional levels or advanced beyond them. Slightly off the 73% who came back from first-time reconstructions, but not big enough to characterize as statistically significant given the smaller sample size of revision surgeries. Furthermore, Spear does extensive quotes from the doctor who did the surgery. And he goes on and on about why this is not the doctor for Christopher Ahmad, the Yankees head physician who performed Eovaldi's second Tommy John in 2016. So forget HIPAA laws. We met like freaking Dombrowski's. Like, I can't say this or that because of HIPAA laws. The doctor?
Oh, no. They wanted him out there.
Dr. Christopher Ahmad, the Yankees head physician who performed the second Tommy John surgery in 2016, has quoted as saying in this story, he's already demonstrated that he's back to throwing as hard with absolutely no elbow symptoms, said Ahmad. I did an end-of-the-season evaluation on him, and his elbow checked out perfectly on physical exams and also on the MRI. His reconstruction is looking so good by imaging and exam that I don't even put him in the same category as a pooled group of revision Tommy Johns. Quote, he goes on, the exam was so good. He says, no, the exam was so good, period. Never had symptoms related to his ligament. Has an MRI that looks good, and his performance has been so exceptional. He's had not just a regular season, but an extended season with the postseason. All that says that this guy is going to be very strong going forward. So this is before he signed. do you want me to go on with the Ahmad stuff? Listen to this. With the number of revision Tommy John surgeries growing, Eovaldi will serve as a poster child for possibility and the idea that a player can come all the way back from the procedure to the point where the market doesn't seem inclined to put an asterisk on his projected performance. And then he goes through the thing, but the one I read online, I don't know if it has it here, about where the cuts were and how he never had a problem outside of the surgical incisions or blah, blah, blah. Did you read this thing?
I saw it.
Like Ahmad
I didn't read the part about the incisions, but I saw it.
Ahmad went into the entire thing about how he cut them, where the cuts were, where the incisions, and I'm not even using the right words, I'm sure. The tunnels. And in Eovaldi's case, the specifics appear particularly strong. According to Ahmad, the tunnels that were drilled into the bone to hold the reconstructed ligament were properly located and held up well for the 8 years between surgeries. Ahmad was able to use those same tunnels rather than drilling new ones, which would have carried greater risks. He thus approached the new ligament using a larger tendon with confidence. And this was the gracilis drawn from the leg rather than the palmaris longus tendon from the wrist. He gave you every flipping detail in that thing.
Well, you know what happened there. I know where you're going. You know what happened there. the team made him available to spear. The team said, I didn't say made him available. That's not fair. Team said, you should give the doctor a call. And then they told the doctor, you can talk to this guy, because that's happened to me, with all due respect.
Of course.
You know, so they, because otherwise the doctor would tell you to go pound sand. Why the hell would he take Alex Spear's call unless he knew that it was okay to talk to Alex Spear?
Story was a setup, and that's not a rag on Spear. He got the story.
No, I've done it.
Yeah, I mean, he got the story, and but boy, was that, should that have been a tell? That they, and it's not the Red Sox team doctor, it's the Yankees team doctor, so who knows, maybe it was Evaldi's agent or whatever. I mean, what doctor's going to give you the tunnel and ligament, good Lord.
No, it was a preemptive strike to let everybody know there's no major concern here with regard to his health. And I'll tell you, okay, fine, then he'll hold up, right?
Yes.
Okay, let's see. I have my doubts. I'm sorry, I have my doubts. And so I just think, and I've said this to you a million times, guys who throw that hard, it's not natural. Sooner or later, pop goes the weasel, baby. That thing
okay,
goes.
Well, it already popped.
Okay, and it probably will pop again.
So, look, this is where I am. They overpaid him. Maybe grossly overpaid him. I'm glad they did.
Yeah, I'm glad the guy's back, too. I know it doesn't sound that way, Murray, but I'm happy that okay. he's back. Okay. I like him. I'm just telling you, the contract is exorbitant.
Murray, give us an update from that fabulous computer over there, and we're right back with your calls on Agenda Free Friday.
This is Felger and Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.